Reaver, Brighton Festivals 2018. Now, all of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2018 with Melissa Dennett and Rebecca Sandals on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melissa Dennett. This is Thursday's Brighton Festival special. We're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeat at 10pm and then 9am the next day.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and for the next 3 weeks we'll be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, creators and people who make it happen. Today we're hearing about a one-man show which explores heritage, identity and cooking.
We're looking forward to films taking in the revolutionary spirit of May 1968.
And finding out about a dance piece for video exploring masculinity and vulnerability.
Along with reviews and previews in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Well, Rebecca, it's been a cracking week so far in the Brighton Festival.
I know, I've been out of town and listening and trying to catch up, and it sounds like I've missed some real treats already.
You've missed some corkers. I went to see Adam last night, and we're going to be talking to Bruce Guthrie later on, who's the presenter of the Mental Health Matters programme here on Radio Reverb. Bruce also went along to that, so we're going to be picking that one apart.
So I won't ask you how it was yet.
Don't ask me how it was, because that would be revealing secrets, which will be revealed in the next hour. And earlier this afternoon as well, I popped into Coat, which is opening up tonight at the Bright Helm Centre, so we're going to be hearing about that later on. And Tim Brown as well from Cine City and the Duke of York's going to be talking to us about what's coming up in the film programmes in the Brighton Festival this coming weekend and the final weekend of the festival. I can't believe the final weekend of the festival. It's only a week and a half away. No, but let's not talk about that now.
Hang on, you fast-forwarded really dramatically there. I don't like that. Let's enjoy it. Let's calm down and enjoy the now.
Return to the here and now. And Shut Down is a multi-screen video installation that's at Onca Gallery, and it features dance, spoken word and rap, exploring masculinity and its pressures and contradictions. Created by Charlotte Vincent of Vincent Dance Theatre, it features a cast which includes local teenagers, one of whom is 16-year-old rapper Ebon Flo. Well, I'm really pleased to say that Charlotte and Ebon Flo join us now. Thanks for coming on Radio Reverb.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so
good to have you here. Charlotte, I'm going to begin with you. In the 2017 festival, you produced Virgin Territory. That was a video installation like this one. And that one looked at what it's like for young women, especially to live in the digital era, and the kind of the pressures on them are being constantly observed, you know, online, on Facebook, on Instagram, that kind of thing. This new project sounds like a step on from that.
It is. It's in many ways the brother project to Virgin Territory. It's the first all-male piece that Vincent Dance Theatre have ever made, that I've ever directed. And I suppose the through line from Virgin Territory is the form. It's still a multi-screen video film installation. It's on at Onca Gallery, which is where we did the last one, which has since toured the country, actually. And we're hoping the same for this one. I suppose the link is how we see ourselves and how we sort of fit along the gender spectrum and what the pressures are on young men, particularly young men and adult males, in contemporary society.
Because I've been to see it, and it's a very bold piece of work for the participants. I mean, they're laying themselves quite bare. They're doing dance, choreographed fighting, there's spoken word within it, but they do really display a vulnerability. So sometimes they are actually crying.
They are. Well, they're performers, so they're sort of crying, but they're being asked to cry by me. But the stories that I suppose are held by Shut Down are, as I said before, along a spectrum of macho all the way through to very vulnerable, and the piece sort of explores masculinity in all of its form, and also the sort of non-binary approach to gender now, which is obviously coming into the fore as a point of discussion.
Sure, sure. And what were the processes then that the performers went through to create the piece? Because I was wondering if it was a collaborative effort or if it was very much you saying, right, this is what you're going to do.
No, I think the reason I wanted to do an all-male piece is because I'm a feminist choreographer, and I've always made work in a way that looks at the binary between the gender warfare, if you like, between men and women. And actually now I feel I can't any longer do that, because there's a whole lot in between that is emerging. It's always been there, but the fascination around it and the discussion of it is emerging into the public sphere of discussion. So we wanted to really embrace that within this piece as well.
I want to bring Eben in there because there's a bunch of women talking about this piece about masculinity. How was it having this feminist choreographer in charge of this? How did you think it finished up?
Yeah, well, I thought it worked quite well because it just meant it was just sort of as many different viewpoints as you can get on a matter, and that's like the best way to go about anything. So, yeah.
That was a conscious effort, actually, but Eben's right that the collaborators, yes, I collaborate, absolutely. I can't make my work without the brilliant people that I work with. And I think that when you get a bunch of men together, they all come with a range of sexualities, a range of experience, and in this case, a real range of age. Some of them are dads, some of them aren't. Some of them are gay, some of them aren't. Some of them are drag artists, some of them aren't. Some of them are rap artists, some of them aren't. So that sort of mix is quite brilliant, actually. And so we all have to kind of get along and work out which stories want to be told.
So, Eben, you were doing some spoken word in the piece.
Yeah.
Would you mind giving us a taster?
Sure. So this is one called Man of the House. The man of the house stands proud. The man of the house shouts loud. The man of the house doesn't do handouts. The man of the house, he stands out. A male icon who applies a firm fist and can channel his fury whilst remaining wordless, he's Michelangelo. The house is sculpture, ready to alter his child's present and future. At least that's how they sell it. That's how they tell it. But we forget, both women and men are equally strong. Both mothers and fathers do rights and wrongs. And the man of the house does not need to strike of the speed of a praying mantis. See, our definition of that position is not set in stone or engraved in bone. Cause right now, it's a position too difficult to hold. It is clay, ready to remold. So like Donatello, we must sculpt this role to one of empathy. Reaching out with more arms than a centipede. But to even have a dad about makes me a lucky one. Remember the dads who passed the mantle to their two-month-old sons. Remember the dads who abandoned their families, leaving a young boy trying to fill a hole of tragedy. Man, that's cowardly. And of course there are reasons, but a single mother cannot provide all of a father's teachings, and a single father cannot provide all of a mother's teachings. That's just the way it is. The ugly truth's heart still beating. So, when you're the man of the house, will you remain a symbolic statue of unobtainable love? Or will you embrace your children with many a hug? Will you be a mirror, only reflecting the worst in your child? Or will you show them that laughter is contagious and you just caught smiles? So this man of the house stands out. But let's see how the next man of the house pans out.
Wow. Wow. That is...
That gave me goosebumps. I've heard that loads of
seriously
times.
Seriously amazing.
It's great.
Here next to you doing that.
Wow.
Done,
Eben. Eben, what have you actually gained from being involved in this project?
Apart from going on a lot of radio.
Yeah. A lot of radio time. No, but I've never been part of sort of a production with lots of other different performers, and especially with dance and that, because, I mean, I really can't dance, believe me. So that's never been something that I've been involved in. So it was just sort of interesting to sort of broaden my horizons and create some sort of specific work that focused on specific issues facing men, yeah.
So, Charlotte, I would imagine that's probably the case for quite a few participants, that it threw up a lot of ideas, a lot of discussions, and has really kind of given people more ideas about their gender, their sexuality.
Yeah, I hope so. I think for me, the work that I'm making at the moment is... it's kind of like a provocation, really. I don't think we're trying to answer anything. Like Eben said, we're trying to show a spectrum of experience. I think the work does that. I'm not coming to any conclusions about masculinity. We're poking the subject around and seeing what people make of it. I think there's enough in there for everybody. And it's been a very authentic process. And actually, Eben and I worked very sort of simply and cleanly together, didn't we? It was just like, here's the subject, write something, I'll edit it a tiny bit, you perform it. And actually, Eben was amazing. He hardly rehearsed at all. He turned up in London, walked on stage, mostly got it right, didn't you?
Yeah, apart from the one time I missed my cue.
I missed your cue at one point. So we all done that.
It appears Eben's an expert at just walking in and performing.
He's brilliant.
Because he got here about 30 seconds before he went on air and just switched it on amazingly. Mm. Eben, did you manage, I mean, how has it been encouraging friends and people that you know in Brighton to come to it, given that, as you say, you're not a dancer and it's billed as a dance piece? How's that gone down with your mates?
I haven't actually got anyone to come down yet because it only opened yesterday. But I'm planning to try and get a few people to come down and see what they think on it because, yeah, it's quite different to my normal stuff.
What do you think that's going to be as a process of saying, come and see it, and how do you think they'll react to, as you say, a piece that's different from your normal work?
I'm hoping they'll like it, but I don't know what they're going to say.
I think the quality of what Eben has contributed is as good as anything else he's done, if not better, because the context is really different. So I think I'm very keen for the work not to be billed as dance, actually. I think there's movement in it, there's theatre in it, there's rap in it, there's a whole compositional aspect to having choreography, if you like, or composition, or even Eben's face across 3 to 6 screens. So it makes the audience work quite hard to watch it. Quite keen for it to certainly be seen as dance theatre, including live music.
I was actually going to be slightly more open going forward,
because
it's not just about the dance. And I see that point, that there's use of words and language. Mm. And I find it interesting that you can then also go downstairs and there's a chance to kind of participate in how you respond to the pieces and write thoughts on masculinity and what that sort of means and the challenges. How did that come about, that sense of interaction?
So the lovely Onca Gallery on St George's Place has in Brighton, which is opposite St Peter's Church, has two spaces. It's got the main gallery upstairs, which isn't large but is a lovely space, and then you go downstairs and there's a couple of smaller rooms. And in one area we are encouraging audiences to share, if you like, their thoughts around this subject, and then there's also a video screen downstairs that is sharing some work that I made with a whole other bunch of young men in collaboration with Audio Active's Room to Rant sessions and with the Connected Hub in Brighton, which is a pupil referral unit. So we've worked with quite, people that aren't necessarily in the educational system, quite vulnerable groups, and they've come up with this incredible rap and spoken word.
I found that room very interesting.
It's
and quite
very moving,
moving
actually,
it's
sitting very
in
there. Moving. Yeah. Because as you said earlier, you know, there's a lot of vulnerability that I think men are often discouraged from sharing, and actually Eben's shared his thoughts on his life as a young man, and the men who probably go up to sort of late 20s whose work is down, stairs have been incredibly open and generous in their responses to the subject. And it took a while to get those raps out of them and the spoken word out of them, but they're down there. I've made some videos to go with them. So like you say, you go downstairs and get a different perspective again on the subject. So I've tried to broaden it out away from, you know, what some people feel is the sort of white middle class kind of dance world. That's not really where my heart is anymore. It's about including a range of voices in anything that I do.
I just want to second the Audio Active point as well, because that's how I got involved. Exactly. And just want to say a big up for Audio Active for getting those group of performers together and stuff like that.
Mm. And kind of leading on from what you were just saying there, Charlotte, I was wondering if it was at all limited by being in the gallery space. I mean, it works there fantastically. But someone I was speaking to yesterday said this should be on the beach, so that when people come down from London off the train with their beer cans in hand and they're sat there on the beach being all leery, they see this and go, wow.
Yes, I think we will be talking to Screen on the Beach or whatever it's called.
Right.
I think that might have been Bruce Guthrie that suggested that, actually, because he suggested it last time I spoke to him. But the piece is designed for galleries or theatre spaces, and that's how it tours. But it can also be shown in foyers in loads of other contexts. And actually, there is an idea that we might tour Virgin Territory and Shutdown together. Mm-hmm. So the two pieces speak to each other, and they can go off on tour together because they're both film-based works.
So, Eben, is this something you'd do again?
Yeah, I'd definitely like to be involved with more stuff like this, like big sort of productions and stuff. Mm.
Fantastic. I'm really, really knocked out by your work. It's terrific. And I think the whole piece is amazing. So, Charlotte, what are your plans for Shutdown then? You reckon you're going to take it a much, much further afield?
Yeah, I mean, we are touring the film installation as from when people see it. Like Eben said, it's only just open. We've literally just finished editing it a few days ago. So we'll get promoters to come and see it. We'll tour that piece. We're also touring the live work again in March next year.
Love to see the live piece.
Across the UK. And I think it's been really interesting. Some of the performers came last night and it's been a journey for them to perform live, which most of them are used to, and then to go through this whole filming process in a freezing cold warehouse in November in New Haven, and running around New Haven Fort. Evan's laughing because we were so show busy. And it was bloody freezing, wasn't it, basically?
It was quite unpleasant at times.
But I think the quality of what they then see with, I should also big up Bosie Vincent, who's no relation, by the way, who is an amazing cinematographer, and he transforms images from stage onto film. And obviously, if you shoot on location, it gives a whole other worldly meaning to what you're looking at because the visual context changes. So in answer to your question, the live work's coming back on tour in a year, and this piece that we're talking about will tour the UK and possibly abroad as well.
Great. So running as of yesterday evening at the Yonker Gallery, runs through to the 27th of May, 12 till 6 p.m. daily, apart from Monday and Tuesday. And it's free, most
it's
importantly.
Totally free, yes. Please
and
come along.
The door is closed because there's a sign on the door saying 14 plus. So don't think it's actually shut. You do have to push the door open.
You just have to come in. We're just trying to safeguard anyone. There's nothing too explicit in this particular work, but we're just trying to make people aware.
Bit sweary.
A little bit leery at times, a little bit over macho, let's say, at times.
Sounds like Melita.
So basically, the door's closed, but do come in any time after 12.
Great. So Charlotte Vincent and Evan Flo, congratulations on Shutdown. It's a tremendous success already, and may you boom with all your future projects.
Well, thank you, and thanks very much for having us on.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special show, and last night at the Dome, Orchestral Collective Stargaze were in collaboration with Deer Hoof, and I saw people ranting and raving about how amazing that was. Well, tonight Stargaze are back. They've got another collaboration at the Dome, this time with This Is The Kit. This is the kit. I can say that, can't I? Just doing their own stuff. This is Hotter Colder.
And that was This Is The Kit, and they're tonight, Thursday, at the Dome, along with Stargaze. You're listening to the Brighton Festival show here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, DAB and online. And with you, Rebecca and Melita, bringing all the information about the festival.
Festival 2018. Radio Reverb, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
This is what it is, and Coat is a one-man show by Yomi Shode, which explores memory, his Nigerian heritage, family, and what you pass on to future generations. It mixes cooking, yes, live cooking, music and poetry, and opens tonight for two nights at the Brighthelm Centre. I went to the Brighthelm earlier as Yomi was setting up.
I have no place, no voice, no recollection of moments I should know of.
What was the inspiration for the show?
So the inspiration is quite layered. It's a lot of things. First, it came from just displacement, or that feels like identity, how that is, and also a sense of creating a show that was speaking to my community for the most part, and a community that might feel a bit in between, and just to talk about that experience. And also I wanted to just explore food and the great tales that can come as a result of creating food, because many dramas can happen in the process of making food or eating food as well. Yeah,
and I guess it all links into family. So, you know, your family cooking for you, then you maybe cooking for your family in return.
Right, and also the whole, which is a universal thing, I'd like to believe, of, you know, the parent that's always cooked this particular dish, and now it's your turn to maybe, you know, parent or guardian that's forever cooked this dish, and now it's maybe your turn to pick up the tricks of cooking a dish, but you want to get it to be right, but it either doesn't turn out to be just the taste that you was looking for, and then that's when I believe we have to add our own secret ingredient, our own touch to this traditional dish that has always been, that's kind of carried through generation to generation. And this is what the show was about, is metaphorically, how do you add a bit of yourself to something that is culturally and traditionally been part of you for the longest time, you know, and feeling proud of it as a result, as opposed to you feeling a bit ashamed or feeling like it's not quite welcomed, you know?
Because there always seems to be that tension between how much you take on of the dominant culture, you know, in your blurb about it, you say you know more about Kanye West than you do about your Nigerian family. How much you assimilate, and then how much you maintain of your own culture, and kind of striking that balance, and where you find that balance.
Yeah, exactly. It's how do you work on this guide of of survival, so to speak. So I'm a father, and upon becoming a dad, you know, I've got all the apps. I've got apps on apps of parenthood. I've got apps. I've got texts and talking to various amount of parents. But at the point that he arrived, all of the theories, all everything was like straight out the window. And then I just realized that, wow, this is an experience that I have to go, that is on the go. That the learning experience of this is literally something that I'm growing up with. I'm not thinking about that theory or what I read the other day, because everything's happening now. And I think it's very important when considering a show like Cult, and especially within my writing process, I had to think in the now, how am I assimilating myself to these day-to-day changes, and how can I ensure that I don't feel guilty, I don't feel bad, or feel like I'm putting any shame on my culture as a result of it? How can I find me? You know, it's a very important question. Where do I find me, and how can I be comfortable with me? Yes.
Stretch my name to the ends of the earth without permission. Pull with slims, bend distresses, pass my parents the name of pride.
So, a lot of flavours in the show. So, literally, with the cooking and poetry, music, a lot of things stirred into that pot.
Yes, not that. Don't make life easy, do I, for myself. You know, the text part of this show was the easiest part for me. And the most challenging is, how do you mix all of this and put it in a 60-minute show without doing too much or without burning the ball? What do you do? I cut myself in rehearsal many a times.
No.
I burnt many a pots. Man, we went through it. It's been a whole process. It's been a beautiful process of just, okay, now how do we bring this show to life? How do we create these sensory feelings as soon as you walk into the room? And it's not just about a story, but it's an actual journey through the smells, through the feels, through music and through movement. We've done a good job. I honestly feel proud of the end result. Every single time I perform this show and I talk to people, it goes beyond the show. It's a discussion. And that is what Cult is about. It's about raising these topics to talk about, you know, and food being a common thing. So let's talk, you know, let's absolutely talk. Because I feel my experience is not just my experience. There are people from all over various countries that are like, that's me, that's me, that's me. And that excites me to even hear that is not just this African experience. It's very much universal.
Sounds like it might have a mixture of joy and sadness in it as well.
Big time. So, true story, I've been working on this show for 3 years, and it's fundamentally about me and my mum. I told my mum about this show the day it premiered, the morning. It was like 1:30 in the morning. It was June 8th. I'll never forget, because it was the day of the elections. And in the morning, I said, oh, so, mum, we kind of need to talk about something. And then she's there. And it was like something like, I stayed with her, and I did not want to write this show. And then she attends the show. I would not want to have my mum embarrassed or feel angry because she did not know what was happening. It was important for me to talk to her about it, you know? And that happened, and she was just like, oh, it's not me you need to worry about. You need to worry about your dad. I was like, oh, cool. I'm glad that's done. Let's move on. So, you coming later? She's like, yeah. I'm like, ah, fine. Cool. But she really loved the play. So after the premiere, I'm like, oh, that's my mum, people. And then she stood up. She waved at everyone. And she really enjoyed it. And that's her, you know. But at the same time, she's a hero. She's my hero. She told me about these stories and things. And I'm just like, wow, you done all of that. Why didn't you talk about it more? I feel like I've got my own hero. Like, it's inspiring just to know what she's been through and just the process of her strength, you know? Yeah, it's a lot of ups and downs in the show, definitely, definitely.
What does it mean to you to be performing Cote in the Brighton Festival?
It means everything. One, it's my first show outside of London. So it's actually testing to see the audience that would engage with Cote for the first time. I have no clue. So I'm very excited to welcome that. Two, again, it's taking in the culture of Brighton, the culture of Brighton Festival. I've been saying to the producer and other people, once the show is done, I just want to go to like the local pub or something, or just get a bite to eat with folks from residents or people around Brighton, to just talk to them, to just kind of immerse myself in Brighton for the 2 days that I'm here, and also to see the shows. I really want to support in that true artist form, in terms of, it's not all about me, it's about really taking in good work and taking in the other shows at the festival. So for the, as long as I'm here, I want to try to catch as many shows as I can. It means everything to be in Brighton right now, so I'm very thankful for that.
So that's Yomi Shorday talking to me earlier at the Bright Helm Centre about his one-man show, Coat, which opens tonight and runs tomorrow as well. There's still a few tickets left, so grab them now online, or you can take a chance for a festival standby at a tenner.
Do you know what? I've just listened to that, and having seen it in the programme, I thought, that looks an interesting piece.
Yeah.
Hearing him now, I'm like, oh, I can't go to that show. That sounds like one that I'm going to regret missing.
It sounds great. And he's actually doing live cooking on stage. I think that's going to drive the audience wild. So
could you smell it? Did you bring me any?
Well, no, I didn't. He hadn't set up yet. He wasn't cooking yet. He hadn't started chopping his onions yet.
I disturbed him
before he started chopping. But yeah, I love that idea, doing some live cooking on stage. So I guess the audience is going to be salivating for an hour during that one.
I loved his story of how he told his mum, like, about half an hour before the play opened. By the way, that's great.
Brilliant. Anyway, it's Yomi Shorday. And the show is Coat at the Bright Helm Centre tonight and tomorrow. Do grab that one. And as we're always saying, that some shows in the Brighton Festival are appearing to be sold out, but people do buy their tickets quite early on in the run. So quite often when the festival is announced, people just buy a whole swathe of tickets. And I know that if you do check on the website, or you check on Brighton Festival's Twitter, then quite often you can pick up a festival standby or return. So brightonfestival.org is the website, and Twitter is at @BrightFest. In a few minutes' time, we are going to be hearing from Tim Brown from the Duke of York's and Cine City. He's looking forward to some of the films taking place this weekend and the final weekend of the festival at the Duke of York's. But before that, let's have a little bit of Brighton music. This is Moon Over Sun and Girls Boys. From Brighton, that's Moon Over Sun and Girls Boys on the Radio Reverb, Brighton Festival's special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. And as ever, this year's Brighton Festival includes a film series as part of the programme. There's a series of cult classics in connected double bills revolving around a momentous month of history half a century ago. Tim Brown from the Duke of York's and Cine City came to Radio Reverb to tell us more.
Taking May 1968... as a starting point, 50 years ago, and obviously very key month, all sorts of things happening all over the world. And closer to home, British cinema was also undergoing its own, well, revolution, if you will. Mm. So there's some really interesting films made in 68. And it was sort of a new guard, young guns coming to the fore and making films. And then we were thinking, so 68, celebration of these wonderful cult films. Certainly in the 60s, right through, in fact, to well into the 80s, cinemas like Duke of York's and the Scala in London, the double bill was a staple of their programming. So
I miss them. I miss those double bills.
Are you too young, Melita, to go?
No, I remember them.
Oh, you remember them.
I do remember the double bills, yeah.
But it was
or a dreadful B movie along with the main film.
But yeah.
You know, quite often, as you say, at the art house cinemas, you get two really strong films together.
And it was brilliant, well, value for money, because you're getting two for the price of one. So we thought it was appropriate timing to actually give people a little bit more bang for their buck, so to speak. And also an incredible cinema education, in a way, an education in sort of best sense of the word. But going to the cinema, and perhaps, you know, I often went to see a film that I knew, but I didn't know the other film that it was playing with. So you got that lovely moment of, yeah, seeing something new. And then also, of course, double bills, it's the connections between two films, because you do watch one in a different way if you've seen something that is related or was an influence. So, yeah, it just felt great fun for us to sort of programme.
Sunday the 13th, Jean Vigo's Zero de Conduite from the 1930s, and teamed up with Lindsay Anderson's If, which is it's one of those films that rebellious teenagers love to watch. I don't know if it stands the test of time. I've not seen it for many years, but I loved it when last time I saw it.
Yeah, I think the last time I saw it, it did stand the test of time, because I think it's not just rebellious teenagers, it's also people. We've all surely had moments where we've wanted to go back to our alma mater or wherever, and sort of exact one's revenge in a particularly visual kind of
and
way.
It's kind of the fag end of the British establishment, isn't it? That sort of post-war establishment, and it's really taking a knock at them and saying, actually, your days are gone now.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So I think it marks a kind of, yeah, a watershed moment, and because it was shot, I think that was actually being shot in May 68, so it sort of feels like it's somehow crept into the celluloid if that was being shot at exactly the same time that the world really... certainly, obviously, France and America with the anti-Vietnam War protests. Things were happening all over the world. So I think, yeah, it feels very of its time and, as you say, does mark the end of a particular era of, yeah, of a certain kind of patronage and a certain kind of authority
in this country. And that public school thing, which obviously continues today.
So. Exactly, yes.
Stand up properly when the head of house addresses you. There's something indecent about you, Travis, the way you slouch about. You think we don't notice you with your hands in your pockets, the way you just sit there looking at everyone.
You three have become a danger to the morale of the whole house.
You can take that cheap little grin off your mouth. I serve the nation.
It's a cracking film and very intriguing because there's colour and black and white sequences that seem to alternate at kind of random. And it is purely, I understand, that there wasn't enough money that they couldn't guarantee that all the colour footage would look fantastic. So to sort of cover themselves, some of the material was shot in black and white. So it's literally that the film footage was a bit unstable, so they couldn't take the risk of shooting it all in colour.
I think people are trying to draw inferences between the colour and the black and white scenes, but there is no inference. It's just saving money.
Exactly,
like
I think
it,
so.
I like it, yeah.
And we've paired that with Zero to Conduit, which is a lovely French film by Jean Vigo. Jean Vigo was an anarchist, so a man after my own heart, and he was a huge influence on Lindsay Anderson. So this is, again, it's children rebelling against terrible authority in education. Jean Vigo, really interesting character, died when he was just 29 years of age.
Really?
And only made four films, but they're all absolute gems. L'Atelante is one feature that he made that he's best known for. A lovely pairing. Jean Vigo influencing Lindsay Anderson, and then the third double bill is Brighton's own Ben Wheatley's A Field in England.
A psychedelic classic from 2013. It's a really psyche film, isn't it?
It is, and it gets better, I think, every time one watches it because it's so odd in a good way, and again, like some of these other films, doesn't fit in with any sort of neat history or trajectory of cinema. It is what it is, and it's brilliant.
It's a very surprising film.
Yeah, it is, yes, and we won't spoil any elements of the plot.
You are all of you confessed idolaters. You will each be tied in a prescribed fashion and cast into the moat. Should you then sink, we will know that your confessions are false. If, on the other hand, you are seen to swim or float, then your confessions of witchcraft are proven beyond a doubt in the sight of God, and you will be withdrawn from the water and hanged by the neck until you are dead.
You can't help me! Lord of Indeed! I was child!
And who'd want to make you pregnant, witch?
We've paired it with Witchfinder General, which, to be honest, it's the only other film I can think of that is also set in the English Civil War. So it's an English Civil War double bill, which feels very appropriate when...
And it's got Vincent Price in it.
And Vincent Price in one of his fantastic roles. And Ian Ogilvy, who the saint, who I think is brilliant in this. And there is a kind of link with this thing of youth, but then being kind of cut down, because the director of Witchfinder General, I think he also died when he was just 29 years of age, and he only really made two films, Witchfinder General and The Oblong Box, Michael Reeves. So there was this flowering in 68. Michael Reeves would have gone on, undoubtedly, to be one of the key names in British cinema throughout the 70s and 80s, but, yeah, died incredibly tragically young. But, yeah, fantastic film and a great double bill, and that's at Duke's at Commedia.
Anything else you want to let us know about for film fans?
We've got a special screening with our friends at Oscar Bright. So there's a screening called Don't Lose Your Head at Dukes of Comedia, Monday 23rd of May, I think that is. But they're a lovely collection of short films. It's always a pleasure and a joy to see the people that they work with and their films on the big screen. So very pleased to be joining forces with them again this year.
That's Tim Brown from the Duke of York's and Cine City talking about some of those film double bills that are coming up. There's cracking double bills, those. I haven't seen If in years. I've never seen it on a big screen. I love that film, though. Have you seen it?
No. I haven't seen any of those films. And
okay.
I was interested in the this weekend Sunday stuff, but the following week sounds a little bit gory for me. I'm you know, the witches being dunked and it's not...
Well, I have to say, A Field in England is one of those films that every time you see it, you see something different in it. It's a black and white, weird, psychedelic masterpiece by Ben Wheatley from 2013. And I just love Vincent Price anyway, so everything Vincent Price says just makes me go like, way, fantastic. So any film with Vincent Price in has got to be good. So, yeah, Witchfinder General and A Field in England on Sunday the 20th. And then this coming Sunday, the 13th, Jean Vigo's Zero de Conduite and Lindsay Anderson's If. What a cracking double bill, all of those.
Both at lunchtime as well, 1 p.m. So they're daytime shows. Won't interfere with going to anything on in the evening that you want to on a Sunday.
Marvellous. And there is an awful lot happening. So let's have a quick butchers at what is coming up in the Brighton Festival this week. Adam, we're going to be talking about in a few minutes. Went to see it last night. That's at the Theatre Royal. Runs through till Saturday. And the Flying Lovers of Vitebsk, which is knee-high, and Bristol Old Vic at the Attenborough Centre. That one also runs through to Saturday. I think that one is totally sold out. You'll still probably get a few tickets for Adam left. It was pretty full house last night, but not totally 100% full.
And you've got Problem in Brighton. That's David Shrigley's creation. It's the rock pop pantomime. That starts tonight, Thursday, running through till Saturday at the Old Market. I think we're going to pop along and have a look at that.
We're going to pop along tomorrow and have a look at that one, yes. And as we've already mentioned, this is the Kit and Stargaze tonight. I'm sure everyone will be ranting about how fantastic that is.
We've already said Coat at the Bright Helm is one to watch. That's tonight, Thursday and Friday. And that sounds great from the interview you did. You know the one that captured my attention and has sold out?
Yeah.
So it's one of those that's annoying to mention. But actually mentioning it, if anyone's listening who has got tickets and is going to the Arms of Sleep and wants to come in and talk about their night's sleep either on Friday or Saturday next week, would you be fascinated?
I would. I'd love to hear about that one, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the one where people go and spend the night
being sung to.
Yeah, at Firle Place.
Yes.
And Darkness to Dawn with the Brighton Choir there.
Sounds brilliant.
Interesting.
Sounds really interesting, yeah. And John Sermon is on tonight at St George's Church up in Kemptown. And we heard from John Sermon last night. Mark Johnson interviewed him. And we're going to be finding out about what that was like tomorrow with a review. And I think also looking forward to Saturday. Unfortunately, I can't go. I have other prior arrangements. But the War Requiem at Brighton Dome, which is a 140-piece Brighton Festival chorus. And apparently it's going to cause structural damage because it's so loud.
Looks amazing. Now, I think, did you run an interview that I did about Apple? When I wasn't
yes,
here.
Yes, while you weren't looking, while you were out the room, we ran your interview about Apples.
So
yes.
Apples is on at the Spire in Kemp Town, and if anyone has little kids, it just sounds like a great show to take. And by little, I mean anyone from 1 to 1.5 years old. I mean, it's designed for the real teenies, preschoolers, and looks like great fun. Take your kid along. 20 minutes of the entertainment and playtime built into the show. And a show with playtime built in. What's not to like?
You listen to Brighton Festival special show on Radio Reverb with Melita Dennett. A few minutes time, going to be talking to Bruce Guthrie about what he made of Adam at the Theatre Royal last night. First of all, a little bit more Brighton music. This is Loom and Magnets. Lovely music from Brighton. That is Loom and Magnets. You're listening to Radio Reverb's Brighton Festival special with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. And Bruce Guthrie
hello.
I haven't introduced you yet. Stay back. He's a presenter of Radio Reverb's Mental Health Matters programme. And last night he went to see Adam at the Theatre Royal. Hello, Bruce.
You're right.
Well, it was quite a performance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So set the scene for us.
Okay, it's a true story, and this is a man called Adam Kashmiri, and he was born in Egypt. And this is his story by him with another, and it is his first... It's this is the beginning of him as a performer, as a storyteller, So, because I loved it, and there are lots of things to talk about, I guess.
Okay, and the point is that Adam is a refugee and a trans man.
Absolutely. And, of course, you know, it set me thinking about working with asylum seekers and working with trans people as a counsellor. And one of the things, there was a particular moment where you're sitting and there's a woman who is, let's say, the UKBA board authority. She's just asking the questions. And so Ms. Kashmiri... So, Ms. Kashmiri, you say that. And, of course, this question of why did you do nothing? This is the first time we've ever heard of this. Outrageous. She doesn't quite say outrageous. And, of course, the reason is, when you seek asylum, the moment that you show two fingers to wherever it is your country, you can't go back from that moment on. And so there's a very real reason why you don't say that in the country and why you then say it when you get here. So, of course, what I didn't enjoy about last night at all was just how debilitating, dehumanising and degrading that is.
It certainly had moments of being a very uncomfortable experience.
Absolutely.
It was a bit of a roller coaster of emotions as well. So it's a two-handed show. So we have Adam, who is Adam himself, and lots of people, I think, didn't realise actually it's autobiographical Adam. Yeah. They thought it was somebody playing a part, but no, this is actually Adam's story. And then there's Rihanna, who plays Adam when Adam was in Egypt as a female.
And there
and she plays other parts as well.
Aspects of his subpersonality. So, of course, it's a two Hander, and there's a particular moment when she leaves the stage, and then you have the sense of, my God, this is what it's like to sit in a flat for 732 days in Glasgow, not leaving the house. And we are seeing the working out of that.
Sorry, it made me think of Julian Assange sitting in an embassy for a long time. But moving on, I noticed in the programme notes it's described as being a multimedia production. I mean, it sounds like the story in itself could carry without the multimedia. But does that add, or what does it mean by multimedia?
Meaning that there is a virtual choir. So the music that's been composed by Jocelyn Pook is actually brought to us not only by 100 voices mixed together, but 100 little profile pics moving on the giant screen.
And they're all trans singers.
Yeah.
They're trans or non-binary singers as well. So, yeah, trans or non-binary virtual choir, which it had a stunning impact. Yeah. When you saw those faces, you saw the faces of real people. There was another element as well when Adam is looking up on the internet to find out, you know, am I the only person like this? And discovers that globally there are trans people everywhere, and there were testimonies flashed up on the back of the screen from trans lives, and I thought that was a really incredibly powerful movie moment.
And there's something, this morning actually I watched the director Cora Bissett, she does a beautiful little interview on YouTube, and she tells you the narrative story of it, but including that moment of the internet and when Adam then first discovered there's a world out there, and it includes me.
The very fact that both of you who've seen this piece are itching to get in with points on indicates it's one of those shows you go and see and then you want to go and have a natter about it afterwards.
I went to the pub afterwards with two friends and we were just like,
you both look really animated by it and things are coming to mind. So what else is coming to mind then?
I guess there's something which was just references me slightly, was that years ago at university I met John Lahr. Quite an unpleasant man, actually, who comes into a student production and goes, my pop, Butler, said to me, in show business, sincerity counts for no points, and walked out again. And I'm not going to swear on the radio, but I actually thought, no, sincerity counts for all points, because this is you doing your story, and what a privilege we all have to get on the radio or on television or on stage to talk about things to be seen. But he's allowing himself to be seen. That seems really important to me.
And brave.
Absolutely.
It was very brave. Yeah, it was very, very raw, very raw. And the stage set itself was amazing, because it was a slightly sloping stage set, and they opened up flaps on the stage to bring things out. So they were bringing out a bed and bringing out various other items. So it was a really creative stage set. It was a bare, stark stage until they opened all these bits out of it. And I thought, you know, really, really clever stage design there. And the lighting was phenomenal as well.
Did it fit in? Because obviously the Theatre Royal is quite small, and sometimes productions you get a sense of that the scale has been trimmed slightly. But was that the case there?
Well, I would have one criticism in that I think the space was actually a bit too big. I mean, it was to fit a large audience in. And I have to say, I've never seen so many young people in the Theatre Royal either. I felt I would like to have seen it in a more intimate space. I don't know what you think, Bruce. Maybe somewhere like the Attenborough Centre, where you had it in the round and you were able to be, feel much more physical proximity to the performers, because it was a very physical performance.
Or in the semicircle or something, because the sort of physicality, it does open itself out.
I'd worry that neither of you would have slept if you'd been any closer and more intimate with the performance, because you look animated about it almost 24 hours on.
I guess the other thing, it is really nice to be able to come and talk about this, and also to say that if people want to go and see it, there are still tickets left. It's sold out tonight.
It has? Yeah. Excellent.
Which is fantastic.
Excellent.
But it's just something I think people will enjoy seeing. And
I reckon if it's sold out tonight, it'll be sold out for the rest of the run. So get in there quick. Get in there quick. And people were crying. I mean, people were actually sobbing in there. You know, it's very heart-rending in places. But, you know, a very positive ending, a very uplifting ending.
Absolutely. And that, if I think about some of the conversation afterwards, someone said, you know, I just wondered, you know, it finished on a high. And my response was, why wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You married them.
Aren't we sick of films and plays where LGBT people die in the end of it? You know, there's too many of those, isn't there?
And also, this is
die before the end of it, well before the end of it, and no longer exist in a lot of them.
Yeah. At least they weren't digging those two holes in God's Own Country, were they? Not in the version that I saw. But no, I think, well, you have to stop something somewhere, so why not stop it at this point?
Yeah, I think absolutely superb show. So yes, definitely worth going to see. A lot of conversations to come out of that. So that's Adam at the Theatre Royal, 8 o'clock, runs through to Saturday. So it's quickly
Saturday,
grabbing a programme.
Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah,
so Saturday evening, the last
8
show.
I think it's a different time.
It's 7 o'clock on Saturday.
And 8 o'clock on Friday.
8 o'clock the rest of the time. Okay, so you may not get a ticket tonight unless you grab one of those standbys. But definitely, if you want to go and see it, don't hum and ha. Do not prevaricate.
And it's just one thing. They've got different allocations at the Dome and at the theatre. So there's also two options of getting your tickets.
Great. So, Bruce Guthrie, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Reverb. And you'll be back in your own Radio Reverb hot seat with your own show?
Yep, on Sunday at 3:00. And we've got an extended interview with Charlotte Vincent, all about Shutdown, which is at the Anker Gallery.
I know, we've already had her on.
Fantastic.
We've already had her on.
Yes.
See?
Good.
So, you've been listening to the Brighton Festival show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals.
Let's say thank you to today's guests, Tim Brown, Bruce Guthrie, Yomi Shodi, Charlotte Vincent and Eben Flo. And Melita, got a bit of music to play us out?
Well, yes, just to let you know, we're back at the same time tomorrow. We're live between 5 and 6 during the festival, repeated 10 o'clock and 9 a.m. the next day. Catch up with the podcast. So if you're out partying, gallivanting, festivaling, and you miss out on these, then the Radio Reverb podcast is the place to go. So we're going to play out with a little bit of Brighton music. What are we going to play out with? She says hurriedly. We're going to play out with Good Jaw and Heel Face. So from me, Melita, and from Rebecca as well. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
Bye.